Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello everybody and welcome to episode 71 of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast with your host Ben Johnson. That is me. Thank you so much for listening. This is the sixth episode in our sixth season of podcasts. We have been running since 2016 and over the years we have spoken to many of the leading lights in the world of martial arts cinema. Be sure to check out all of our previous episodes via our website kungfumovieguide.com. We are also available through all the major podcast providers. If you would like to get in touch with the show, it is very easy to do so. We are on Twitter at KF Movie Guide. We are also on Facebook and Instagram at Kung Fu Movie Guide. And if you would like to send me an email, the email address is hello@kungfumovieguide.com. Okay, that's the plug over with. We have a great conversation coming up on today's show with the Kung Fu star Philip Ng. So, without any further ado, let's get on with the show. Here we go.
Well, if you're really so determined to have a fight, then I'll oblige.
Hello, hello, hello there, Foo followers around the world. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, wherever you are listening to this, welcome. Welcome one and all to the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast, episode 71. My name is Ben Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. How are you doing? Are you good? I hope you are. I hope you're keeping well. I hope you're staying safe. I hope you're training. I hope you're keeping fit. You're staying healthy. I'm trying to do the same here. We're slowly coming out of hibernation, it feels, here in the UK. So things are starting to look up a little bit. Anyway, I do hope you are keeping well. Philip Ng is on the show today. Philip Ng, you know Philip, of course, from his role as Bruce Lee in the 2016 Hollywood biopic Birth of the Dragon. And maybe you know Philip from his 2014 Kung Fu film Once Upon a Time in Shanghai. He's a big Hong Kong film star. And he's a genuine kung fu guy as well. His 2019 film, Undercover Punch and Gun, great title. It's available to watch now in North America on the streaming platform Hiya TV. That's HIYAHTV.com. And it's available now on Blu-ray, DVD and digital, courtesy of Wildgo USA. Head over to kungfumovieguide.com to read our review of Undercover Punch and Gun. It's a fun Hong Kong action comedy. It's sort of a love letter, I would say, to those stunt-filled Hong Kong action films from the 1980s and 90s. Philip stars in the film. He is also the action director, and he stars alongside his buddies Vanessa Wu and Andy On. So it's sort of a triple header, I would say. Philip, Van, and Andy have worked together loads over the last 20 years or so. Maybe not 20 years, nearly 20 years. And it's always great to see those guys on screen together. So I will throw over to my conversation with Philip Ng shortly. Just a few quick notes before I do. Mark your calendars, people, for the next Fighting Spirit Film Festival here in the UK. The annual martial arts movie event takes place in London on the 11th of September 2021. It's been running for 6 years now, and I have been there since the very start. I've been something of a roving reporter at the Fighting Spirit Film Festival, chatting to a lot of the filmmakers in attendance. Go and listen back to some of those previous episodes from previous Fighting Spirit Film Festivals in our archive. If you are a filmmaker and you're listening to this today on Monday the 14th of June and you have a short martial arts action film that you would like the Fighting Spirit team to consider for this event, then there is still time to submit it. Head over to filmfreeway.com/Fighting Spirit Film Festival. You can submit your film there, and who knows, your movie might not only get screened, but it might even win an award as well, which is cool. I should say this isn't a paid plug or anything. I'm good friends with the organisers of Fighting Spirit Film Festival, and it's always such a wonderful event. And Sue Cole and the whole team just put in so much work and effort and passion into really putting on a great event. So look, I'm going to be there. I'm really looking forward to it and get to hang out and see everyone. So save the date, 11th of September 2021. Head over to fightingspiritfilmfestival.com for more information. One other thing, I wanted to thank everyone for your lovely comments following the previous episode with Brahim Chab. I wanted to read out a tweet. There was a tweet here. It came in from @jinxedthoughts, and it reads, "Great and interesting interview with Brahim Chab in episode 70. Really enjoyed listening to his thoughts on how social media has affected up-and-coming talents." Yes, we did speak a bit about that. He did share his opinions on social media and also the attitude of up-and-coming stunt performers. And Brahim also talked about his work with the likes of Jackie Chan and Jean-Claude Van Damme and Donnie Yen. So it was a real fascinating chat. Do go back and check it out if you haven't heard that episode already. And if you do like what you hear, then please do remember to leave a star rating or write a comment or write a review, tell your friends, whatever you can do to help spread the good word of the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. That is very much appreciated. The website is the best place to find all of our contact information. You can also sign up to our mailing list there. You can read the latest martial arts movie reviews. You can donate to the Kung Fu Movie Guide. It's all there. Head over to kungfumovieguide.com. Okay, that's probably just about enough from me for now. Let's throw over now to my conversation with Philip Ng. This opportunity came up a couple of weeks ago now, where I was asked if I would like to speak to Philip, and I said yes, without a doubt. So I do have the team at Walgo USA to thank for setting this one up. So thank you so much, Sarah Clinton and Leif Helland. Thank you both so much for all your help with setting up this chat with Philip. The film is called Undercover Punch and Gun. It stars Philip Ng, Andy On, and Vanessa Wu. It's out now in North America, courtesy of Walgo USA. Okay then, I will be back at the very end of this conversation to sign off properly. But until then, here we go. This is me talking to the awesome Kung Fu movie star, Philip Ng. You are based in Hong Kong?
Yes, I'm in Hong Kong at the moment, yeah.
How is Hong Kong today?
It's good, it's good. You know, the weather's not too bad. It's getting a little hot up here, I'm sure. Where are you located, Ben?
I am in London, so I'm all the way in the UK. Yeah, well, yeah, the British do like to talk about the weather, but it is actually quite nice today, so that makes a change.
I was filming in London, actually. A couple years back. Yeah, I was filming for 2 weeks. It was for a TV show in Hong Kong. It was a wonderful experience. My first time in London, actually. I went to me and some of the cast members went to Thorpe Park. Is that the your
Thorpe Park? The fairgrounds. Yeah, good one.
Super fun.
Good. Oh well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I love Hong Kong, so I do miss it actually. I'd like to go back over. You've lived out in Hong Kong now for, you know, what, 20 years now?
Almost 20 years. Yeah. Not counting when you know, I was born here, you know, and I was raised here when I was a little bit younger. Then I moved to the States. But I've been back for a long time. Actually, I've been here longer than I've been in the States. So,
yeah. You like living out in Hong Kong then? And I guess, you know, there's plenty of work out there as well, isn't there? Which is the crucial thing.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, like for my industry, my specific plans for coming back to Hong Kong was to actually, you know, to give it a go in the action movie business. And then, that was my specific reason. You know, obviously it's the origin of this stuff, right? You know, Hong Kong action movie, the origin of, you know, all the fight scenes and all the kung fu scenes that you see in, like, you know, all the Marvel movies and everything, you know, they originated here, you know, and I thought this was the best place to go to learn the craft and get some jobs. I was really fortunate, you know, after a few years to be able to do that.
Well, I want to dive into that a little bit more, because, and especially, you know, just generally working in Hong Kong and you know, the sort of state of play over there, because you're right, Hong Kong in the 80s and 90s, during that golden age of action cinema, was churning out hundreds of films a year. You know, it was a huge, one of the largest film production locations in the world.
And Hollywood of the East.
The Hollywood of the East, absolutely. And it set the trend and influenced action cinema and still influencing action cinema today.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Phil, you've been there in the last 20 years. I guess where the industry has changed quite considerably since those days, hasn't it? So
absolutely. Some say I was born in the wrong period. They said, you know, they said I would probably be a lot more prolific if I was around in the 80s and 90s. But I mean, at the same time, there are a lot more people doing this stuff in the 80s and 90s. So, you know, maybe perhaps that I have more opportunities now. So we don't know.
But also, we should say you are actually a martial artist, you know. So is that quite rare in Hong Kong?
You know, I always say this, you know, I always am very impressed and very, I look up to actors who aren't action trained to do action movies, but I think it's more convincing when you have someone who's actually trained in that discipline to do that thing, to perform as that character. But you know, I mean, I guess the trend is you know, there's different trends now, right? Like than there were in the 80s and 90s, and I think sometimes it's more marketable to perhaps train a pop star to do some kung fu and put him in a kung fu movie, then perhaps put someone who is maybe lesser known but better at kung fu in that role. I mean, I think that's true around the world too, and especially now with better filming technologies and CG and you know, basically exchange the face of the stunt double with the face of the actor. So I mean, you know, I mean, the trend is definitely changing. Yeah,
you must feel like you're in quite a good position in the sense that, you know, you're an English speaker, but you're a Cantonese speaker, Mandarin speaker as well. So my understanding is you get the best of, you know, all the different markets. Is that how you see it?
It wasn't planned, you know. I mean, and like I said before, I came to Hong Kong because I believe this was the place to learn the craft, and this was the best place to gain that knowledge, because this is where that stuff was invented, you know. And then, but then again, you know, because of my background, I think I do have an advantage. I mean, not just. You know, not because it wasn't something that was planned, obviously, because you know, I didn't move to America by my choice. You know, I didn't learn English by my choice, right? But I mean, it's good being bicultural, I think, and then being able to you know, gauge both markets. And also, right now is an advantage because the world is much smaller now, especially with the advent of streaming services. So I mean, I can, you know, produce movies or create movies in Hong Kong and sell directly to a streaming service overseas, and then they can, you know, market it over there, and I keep distribution rights over in Asia. You know, there's many, many ways to do things now from one area and be able to distribute your work to be seen all over the world.
And that brings us neatly onto Undercover Punch and Gun, because obviously this film now has been picked up in the States. It's getting a release from Wild Go USA. But this movie came out in China a couple of years ago now, didn't it? So 2019,
I believe. Yeah. 2019, yeah.
It always takes a while for us to get these movies in the West, it seems. But anyway,
yeah, but I think this movie was you know, took a little bit longer. We had some problems with getting distribution and stuff like that. And
yeah,
and but you know, I mean, like, I knew eventually we'd get it. So I mean, everything turned out the way it's supposed to turn out.
And you must be super excited this movie's getting this wider release now.
Absolutely, yeah. Of course. I mean, I think a lot of audiences, you know, they don't, you know, they have the luxury of being able to find these movies, or maybe they don't want to watch it in another language. It's easier for them to watch a movie and pay attention to the on-screen action and listen instead of reading subtitles. So this is a good way for them to do it.
You're the action director on it as well as starring in this film, so it's a big role to play on a production, and quite exhausting as well, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the hardest things that I've ever done in my life. Not because I was action directing and acting, but I was, you know, the first time putting on a production hat, you know, a producer hat.
Yeah.
And that was really rough. But I mean, I met Vanessa and Andy on a movie called Star Runner. I'm not sure if you've heard of it.
Yeah.
It's an action movie from way back when. But it was my first gig as a assistant action choreographer. Yeah, I think it was the first time that Andy won the newcomer award. You know,
he only won that award. So he's great in that movie, isn't he? He's great.
He is excellent in that movie. And then Vanessa was the first time that he did you know, was a lead in an action movie, because he just came out of a TV show called Meteor Garden, and it was a part of a boy band called F4, and it kind of blew him up, and he was a very hot commodity at the time. So I was, because I spoke English and both those guys were from the States as well, I was in charge with training them as well as choreography. But during the pre-production, I was in charge of training them. And, you know, they didn't particularly need a lot of training, but I kind of gave them a resume of things they needed to do. And but Vanessa, I was with him a little bit more because he needed to be a convincing Wing Chun practitioner, also Hong Kun.
His background, he's a dancer and a singer, isn't he? And he's, as you say, in a pop band. He sort of looked to you as his sort of martial arts mentor, I suppose. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I guess that would be fair to say, though. I wouldn't say it officially in any sense because, we only trained together mainly for movies, you know. And then when he comes to Chicago, you know, he stops my Kung Fu school, works out a little bit. But, you know, I mean, the main thing is we became really good friends after that movie because, you know, it's like when you're a freshman in high school, it's a first for everybody. You know, we got real close. We didn't know all the evils of this industry and all that stuff.
Yeah.
We're innocent, you know, and we all became really good friends from that on. And then from that point on, I always had the idea of, oh, we should all work together in some capacity. And then we always talk about like 80s movies from the 80s and 90s, you know, Hong Kong movies, action movies, you know, something in that vein would be great, you know. And I was very vocal about this idea, you know. And then we went on to work on our separate projects. And then I was filming a movie one day, and I was working with the producer on that movie. His name is Charlie Wong, and he heard about me wanting to do something like this with my brothers, you know, with Vanessa and Andy, and he's like, do you have any ideas about how you want to go about this? And I gave him some ideas, and then the ball got rolling, and then we went through, you know, a few directors, a few scripts, and eventually landed with Frankie and Philip Lui. And they wrote it because they're, you know, they were first time directors, but they're very prolific script writers. If you look at the IMDb's, a lot of the, you know, blockbuster movies in Asia, they wrote. So they're really good storytellers. So I had a lot of trust in them. And then Gordon Chan came on, gave our movie a lot of legitimacy. And, you know, and then, you know, we were able to get some independent financing thanks to Charlie Wong. And then, you know, when we put the thing together.
So you were involved in actually trying to get the finance going for this movie as well then, were you? Were you involved in that?
Not so much so. That was more Charlie Wong's, you know, his department. But I was in charge of getting all the actors together, you know, pulling the crew, designing, you know, everything. And I had a lot of freedom. I really got to thank Charlie and Gordon for giving me so much freedom to do what I want. I mean, you had to fight for things, you know, like the title, Undercover Punch and Gun. That was something we had to fight for. Because we knew the tongue in cheek, and we were self-aware about what we were doing. So, and I think because the audience will know what you're trying to do. And if you're self-aware about it, it takes on a different meta level. So, but I don't know if they could understand that in the beginning, but they whether they understood or not, they kind of gave in and they let us use the name. So, I mean, it was stuff like that.
In a world where we have CGI and so much wire work and all this different trickery, a lot of this stuff's in camera. I mean, you can see it in the outtakes. You know, a lot of it's in camera. It's yourself. It's Andy. It's Vanessa. You're all doing the stunts. You know, you're doing all the work. So that was a conscious effort then, I suppose, from you guys to be like, no, we need to strip the action back and show it how it used to be done.
Yeah, I mean, that was on two levels, I think. First of all, like, we wanted to pay homage to the 80s and 90s, and that's what they did. I mean, due to two reasons, monetary and also technical deficiencies, right? And we had technical and monetary deficiencies as well. But at the same time, we wanted to do this. I mean, even if we had the budget to do a lot of CG or a lot of, you know, work that can alleviate, you know, some of our work, we wouldn't do it. We would still do it like this. Or maybe we'd have more time to film this, but we would still do things in a very similar vein. Because, like you said, you know, it's very visceral. I mean, I think you can definitely tell when something is CG and something isn't, or when something is wire work and when something isn't. The audience has a very smart eye now. They can see that stuff. And I think, you know, I want to make something that, you know, harkens back to, you know, the 80s and 90s, not just because of our budget limitations, but because that's the kind of movie we want to make and we're willing to make.
And working with Andy as well, again, you guys have sparred on screen numerous occasions throughout the years.
Yeah.
You're good buddies as well, aren't you? So I guess that must be really great to work together. You both know, you know, what you're aiming for, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just the old adage of working your friends, you got to be careful. And, you know, it's the same. You have to, because you have to, sometimes you don't want to overstep your boundaries because you're friends. You want to, because, you know, you have to understand they're professionals as well. You know, they're, yeah. So you kind of have to, you know, kind of step the line, but also at the same time, you're like, okay, because we're buddies, you have to, maybe, can you do a little bit more for me? And, you know, and you have to kind of gauge that line. But, you know, like I've worked with them so many times. I mean, not just on screen, but like a lot of times I'm choreographing him, you know, I'm the choreographer for his movies and stuff like that.
Cause, yeah.
And because we have that trust with each other. I mean, all three of us, you know, like me and Van are godfathers to his children, right? So we're all pretty darn close. But I mean, like for this movie, like I said, like, you know, I there were a lot of investors, there were a lot of independent, you know, financing. So there's a lot of people helping out. So there's a lot of voices, and I wasn't in control with, in terms of exactly how the script went or exactly how the story went, but we knew how the characters, how we wanted to portray the characters. We knew what to do, and we had a lot of freedom doing that. So as soon as like Vanessa got his character, I got my character, Andy got his character, we knew what we had to do in the story. But in terms of how we developed it, it was pretty much, you know, up to the individual actor. So I think,
yeah.
I mean, maybe not so in myself, but maybe watch Andy or Vanessa. You notice like I noticed a lot of people that I've been doing interviews with lately. They're saying, oh, it's, well, what's some of Andy's better work, it seems like, or Vanessa's, even though it's a lower budget movie. I think it's because of the creative freedom and the non-pressure that they were feeling. They're able to do whatever they wanted to do that they felt fit the movie.
Special shout out to Jiang Lucia.
She's great,
isn't she? I know she was in, you know, Operation Red Sea. She was in Once Upon a Time in Shanghai as well, I think.
Yeah. She played the sister of my love interest.
Did you get her involved in this movie then as well? Because you'd worked together?
I definitely had a part in getting her. I think the main impetus in getting her was one of the directors, I believe. I think it was Frankie. Or maybe it was a, I don't know. We all loved her because we used to be in the same management company back in the day, and we made a lot of movies together in the past. And then before Operation Red Sea, she wasn't really getting the recognition I think she deserved because, you know, she did that. She debuted with that action movie, and then kind of, you know, just her career kind of went up and down until she did Red Sea, and I am so proud of her now, you know, because I'm not just saying this, you know, I've been in this industry for over 20 years, and she's one of the most hardworking, good attitude, professional, skilled human beings I've ever worked with. And and it was a blessing working with her. And then look at how professional she is. She got like super buff for our movie. And then and in every fight scene that she did, she put in her 110%. And and not just her action, and her acting too. You can see how much she put into it, and I really appreciate all the work she put in, and she made the movie. She really added to the movie.
Are you quite happy with how the film ended up then?
I think I'm good because I think all the plot lines, everything were closed. I think the movie, there weren't any plot holes. You know, it's not a very complicated movie. It's a movie that drives the action. And and I think I was pretty satisfied with all the scenes that came out. I mean, of course, when I say satisfied, I mean, I'm not 100% satisfied, right? I mean, I wish I had more time and more money. I think I would have done things differently if I had maybe another month. We had less than a month. We had less than, I think we had 28 shooting days, maybe. It was a very short shoot. And we did a lot in a short time. And if we had more time, I think I could have shot things a little bit more in detail. But overall, I think it's a good showcase of what we can do.
Just in context then, so say a movie like Once Upon a Time in Shanghai, I mean, how many days are you getting for a movie like that compared to
How many days do you think we got for that? How many days do you think we got for Once Upon a Time?
Well, you know, a lot of work. I mean, this is the thing I don't know with shooting schedules in Hong Kong. You had a few months on that, I'm going to say, maybe 2 months. Did you have 2 months on that?
No, we had less than 28 days for that too.
Really? Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, because it was rough, man. I think we had a month. It was rough. But we did come back for pickups. We did a do a week of pickups. But like not a lot of that stuff went back into the actual movie. So most of the movie was shot in that time. I mean, we go back to Once Upon a Time in Shanghai. I mean, that was, I mean, I just did an interview and they asked me what was the toughest scene that I've done as an actor. So as an actor, the toughest scene that I've done was the long take that I did in Once Upon a Time in Shanghai when I fought all those swordsmen. We did two long takes that day. And so it was one working day. It was already a blessing because we had a whole working day. Usually that doesn't work. So that whole working day, Yunuo Ping and his team choreographed, and then I rehearsed, and then we shot those two long takes in one day. And that, the long take that made it on film, because we did two separate ones, but you know, it was kind of like, you know, a little bit redundant when it was like too long. So it ended up cutting out one of them, but the one that made it in the film, we shot it 36 times. And it was like running a marathon. We don't get breaks. And it was like, do you see the takes? Every time I'm done, I pass out on the ground, you know, I'm done and drained. And then I even remember Yun Chengyan, Yun Welping's brother. He was also one of the choreographers on the set. He also played one of the characters, right? He actually looked at me. He's like, oh, dude, I understand how you feel. I mean, there's a saying in Chinese. He's like, even if you're a tiger, you'll become a weak cat, you know, a sick cat. Or something like that. So basically, I look like a sick cat after that scene. That was rough. But I mean, and then I remember asking Yunuo Ping. I was like, "Yo, how long do you think you'll get? You know, shooting something like this in the West." And he's like, "Oh, probably 2 weeks or something. You get rehearsal time, then you get to shoot." Yeah. And then, you know, I'm like, "Really?" And then, but later on, I found out it was the truth because you know, later on, I did work on a Hollywood production, and you do get insane amount of time to do very little things. So.
You hear this about a lot of Chinese productions. You know, even a film like, you know, A Wolf Warrior 2, say, where, you know, they're shooting round the clock. I mean, you know, there's no breaks. And
I think the longest I've shot was 36 hours straight.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, the crew would switch. I mean, the director would go to sleep. The assistant AD would come in. And then the action choreographer would be there. Then he would go to sleep. And then his assistant would come in. That would go in for 2 days. I've been through that kind of schedule. It's it's rough. It's rough. But you don't get that in the States. In the States, they force you in the West. You know, when they have unions and all that stuff, so they you have to rest.
Like,
they tell you like, oh wait, you already worked this whole week. We can't let you work today. I'm like, really? You can't let me work? All right, that's cool.
What do you think about that though? Because sometimes you can have too much time, and then it's just, you know, you're sort of sitting around, like, you know, what you want to be working, really, don't you?
Well, I mean, like for instance, I for Birth of the Dragon, the opening sequence between Xia Yu, you know, when he fought against the Tai Chi guy, I filmed that. I actually choreographed that scene because Corey couldn't come back for pickups, so I shot that scene. We had a lot of time. Like we had a month in prep. I mean, I flew to LA. I choreographed it with a stuntman over there. I flew the footage to my boys in Hong Kong, and then they did a previs, and then they shot it back to us. And then we flew to China, like, you know, 2 weeks in advance. And then we trained the actors, and then you know, and then we had like 3 days to shoot it. It was crazy, you know. I mean, I mean, there was a lot of like reassurance. I mean, everybody had to know exactly what's going on. Like I had meetings with like the storyboard artist. I had the meetings with like the DP. I mean, everyone had to know what's going on. So, I mean, in a way that was good because when we get to the set, everyone knew what was going on. There wasn't any guesswork, but it didn't leave a lot of room for interpretation because sometimes I think a happy medium would be good. Like you have enough time to film what you want to film, but you still have that flexibility to maybe change certain things on the fly.
Yeah. And but, do you enjoy that as a choreographer then when you're working on a set that you can be flexible on those Hong Kong shoots? Because, you know, it all depends how, you know, your actors are feeling, but also, you know, just the environment as well. What you did in the previs might not necessarily work once you get onto set and onto the location.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I'm one of the fewer action directors and action choreographers in Hong Kong that actually kind of do the American style.
Yeah.
So what I mean, I do, or like maybe not American style, but like, you know, the more a previs kind of thing. I would always choreograph and I would always do previses before every fight scene. So I would always do that in prep. And sometimes that doesn't happen, especially when I first went into the industry in Hong Kong. A lot of times they just choreograph on the set and then you learn it and then you fight. I mean, you know, even in like bigger budget action movies, that's what happens sometimes. So, and I think there's inherently a lot of problems with that, you know, in terms of design and kind of like, you know, rush kind of, you know, job. I mean, no matter how experienced you are, I think there's always room for like, you know, thinking over something, right? So I like to choreograph ahead of time, but then most of the time, like, the main ideas get kept because, like I said, when I create a scene, I create it like, you know, like a joke, you know, like a punchline. There's a beginning, there's a middle, and there's a punchline. So there's a whole design for the scene. So, you know, I want to keep that intact when I do my thing.
I've killed many men with this pole, but still, I don't want to kill you yet.
You were born in Hong Kong, but you left Hong Kong when you were quite little. Is that's right, is it?
Yeah. I was born here, and then I went to America when I was about seven.
Yeah, Chicago.
Chicago. Really, suburbs outside Chicago, because a lot of my Chicago friends, they don't like it when I say I'm from Chicago. They're like, "You're not from the city. You're from the suburbs." But you know, right. Whatever. I'm from near. I'm outside Chicago somewhere.
You are part of a kung fu family. We should say. I think your father's a kung fu expert. Your uncle as well. So. Was there any other choice for you growing up? You were going to go into the family business, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, like, how do you say this? My father, actually, he's an accountant by trade, but, you know, we run a kung fu school, you know, but we're not any less professional. You know, our boys fight professional, you know, fight a semi-professional, and then we do a lot of tournaments and everything. But in terms of, is there another choice? I think up until I was 13, I just kind of was going through the motions, I think, just learning the forms, you know, not really thinking about what these movements are actually, you know, done for, you know, just things that it's like exercise, you know. Then when I was 13, I got in a little more scuffles, you know, and I realized, how come I know Kung Fu by name, but I'm not able to kind of use these skill sets. Then I kind of put myself a little bit more into investigating on that side of the martial art kind of spectrum, like the function of it. And then that's when I was all in. That point, so.
Locked in. So Choi Li Fut and Hong Ga, they're your main systems, and Wing Chun as well.
Mainly is Choi Li Fut and Wing Chun. Hong Ga. I learned that it was one of the first systems I learned as a youth. I was a very young kid from my uncle. But I mainly just did the sets, the forms. But in terms of you know, the whole system, from the concept to application, you know, everything in between, the two systems that I'm most familiar with, and I have instructor certifications in, are Choi Li Fut and Wing Chun.
When did your dad learn those?
My father learned from Do Huan Zhang, a very famous seafood in Hong Kong. When he immigrated to America, we started teaching in community centers before we started our own school. So that's one of the reasons why Choi Li Fut is one of the main systems that I am, you know, versed in, because of my father. And then Wing Chun is because of my uncle. I trained with him because when I was investigating, like really hardcore investigating into, you know, the combat side of martial arts, you know, Wing Chun came up because of his connection to Bruce Lee. And my uncle was a practitioner of Wing Chun under Wang Shengdao. I trained with him for a little bit. And then he suggested that I go to Hong Kong to train with his master, his sifu, Wang Shengdao. So I did that. And Wang Shengdao, if people who are who follow Wing Chun, is the senior disciple of Yip Man, and also the older Kung Fu, older Kung Fu brother to Bruce Lee.
He taught Bruce Lee, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he instructed Bruce Lee in a lot of things. And in fact, his character, a character that was based on him, was portrayed by Wong Heung-ling in Yip Man 2. So anyway, so I trained with him, and it was very influential to me. And then but those two systems were systems that are very very different in terms of the way they generated power and the way they structured their bodies. But, you know, their philosophies were the same in terms of, you know, function. So I was very interested in them. You know, for me, it was like not only like a way to learn how to fight, but it was like, you know, it's like a super like hobby, you know, like how people really want to investigate in certain things. So that's how I felt about it.
Did you know then when you were going through school and as you were training, and I know you did study, you went to university, but were you were always thinking, well, I think, you know, becoming a kung fu instructor, that's the path for me. Did you make that sort of decision quite early on then?
I always loved teaching kung fu. I knew I would, I mean, by the time I went to college, my father already had opened a kung fu school. So we had our own kung fu school already. So, I mean, regardless of what I did, I was always going to be teaching there, because my father had a full-time job as an accountant, but he still taught every day. And it's something that we just love to do, and we want to share with the community, and we want to kind of, you know, make sure to keep this alive.
Is he still teaching, Phil?
Yeah, my father's still teaching. Yeah, he's still teaching. Yeah. But I mean, not as active anymore. You know, his hip's not so good, but he's always at the school. Instructor's there helping out. But, you know, I mean, like, it wasn't my path. I never really thought about that as a career path. It was more something that I knew I wanted to do. But making kung fu movies was always like a pipe dream. Actually, I went to school for graphic design and education. So I got my master's in education, and I actually came out, taught for a year before moving back to Hong Kong to do what I'm doing now.
Now, let's talk about that. So what made you think, well, I want to, you know, get into the film business, but, you know, you're in the States there. I mean, you know, what was the decision not to pursue Hollywood and actually go back to Hong Kong instead? I mean, what was the thought process there?
Well, I mean, we're also talking about 20 years ago, and there weren't a lot of Asian representation in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And also another thing is, like, I don't know if I said before, but I mean, I specifically chose Hong Kong because that's the origin of the, you know, the kung fu action movie genre. There wasn't, even if there were super big representation in the States, I would still go to Hong Kong because I wanted to learn that specific craft, you know. And then you know, it's like me going back to Hong Kong to train with Wong Shun Lam, you know, specifically. I want to go to the source, you know. I don't want to just, you know, secondhand learn anything. So I went to the source, and you know, and then I it took a long time before I was able to, you know, build my resume. But, you know, I'm glad I came. You know, it's a dream and a blessing, right? I mean, I'm a fanboy, basically, that got to make kung fu movies with my idols. So it's pretty cool.
Absolutely, yeah. All those greats, you know, Sammo, Yen Wu Ping, Corey Yu, and Jackie Chan. Like, you've worked with all these guys. But I'm just wondering, did you have a dream of actually becoming a leading man, though, an actual star of films, or, you know, what was your plan?
I was afraid to dream that. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, you watch a Jackie Chan movie, I'd be like, oh man, I would pay money for him to punch me in the face. You know, that was the extent of it. You know, it was just like, being, if I could be part of that in any way, it would be great. You never, because, you know, you're afraid to dream this dream. It's like, you know, who do you think you are, right? You know, how good is your kung fu, or you know, you look at yourself in the mirror. You know, it's a lot of concerns about these things, right? I think that's what keeps a lot of people from achieving any dream that they have. They're afraid to move forward. So I had that fear, right? But you know, I trained it, like I said before, I went to Hong Kong to train every year with my Sifu Wong Shun Lam until his untimely passing. And then after that, I would still travel to Hong Kong and train with my senior Kung Fu brothers, like his senior students, you know. And during one of those trips, one of my college friends, she knew some people that were in the production business, and they needed like an extra, or like a very small bit role for a movie. And, you know, I got it. And then, and during my trip back that time to train, I was, that summer, I was able to be in a movie, you know, and I met some people on there, and I thought, that's not so hard, you know? So, and I went back to the States,
simple,
you know,
as that.
And then I went back to the States, and I was like, you know, it's not that bad, not that hard. And,
Which movie was that? Because was there an early role I saw on IMDb was Twins Effect, but I don't know. Was that?
No, it was before that. It was before that. No, it was before that. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'll think about it. I'll review that. I look like an idiot in that movie. But anyways, I went back home and I thought about it, and I talked to my parents. I was like, you know what? I want to quit my job and go back and give it a go, because I think, like, if I want to be like a relatively young and spry actor, I only have one opportunity. If I want to become, you know, want to stay being a teacher and teach kung fu, I think I can always come back and do that. So
yeah, and you always would have regretted it if you hadn't have taken the plunge, I suppose. It's one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah,
and did your parents and your parents agreed with that, or what were that?
They were very cool about it. You know, later on I learned that they, you know, they were worried in the beginning when I wasn't really making any progress. But you know, they were very supportive, and I think they said, like, since I got my degrees and I got all my licenses and everything, and I can always, you know, fall back on that, and you know, why not give it a try? But I think when they said give it a try, I think they didn't think I'd be here for 20 years. You know, they probably thought it was going to be a year or two, and I'd give up and come back, but, you know, I did.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You bastard. I didn't know who you were.
The big one was Star Runner, wasn't it? 2003. And that was working with Chingar Lox. So, you know, he's got that connection to Samo. And I believe, you know, he doubled for Jackie as well back in the day. So, you know, he was action director on that movie. And he sort of, you know, allowed you to, you know, work on set, train the actors.
That was my first gig as the action as one of the choreographers. You know, I did stunt work and did extra work before that. But that was really my, I would consider that to be my entry job into the industry. And then, you know, and then I was also part of Dalok's stunt team at the time. And then, and then I was one of the early members of his stunt team. They're very prolific now, but I was a very early member of that team. And yeah, and I learned a lot working on those movies. I mean, they were very hard shoots and I had a lot of responsibility. I think I was giving a lot more responsibility than someone that I would normally would give in that position, because now I'm in the position to give responsibility to other people to delineate, you know, work for other people to do. But I realize now that I was given a lot of responsibility, and I'm glad for it, because I learned a lot from that. I mean, like, for instance, they used to cut an Avid, right? Back in the old days, they didn't have Final Cut Pro. And then I would be one of the, because they didn't write down shots or have shot lists in a lot of these movies, like I said, you know, back in the 80s and late 90s and even early 2000s. So I was in charge of remembering a lot of the shots. And then sometimes I would go into the edited room and work with the editor and learn a lot about editing, you know, in that vein. So working on these movies, I mean, I didn't go to film school. So working on all these movies behind the scenes really prepared me for, you know, working in front of the camera.
Did you just develop as an actor then, would you say? The more roles that you were given, did you study drama or anything in Chicago?
No, I did not study drama. But, you know, I had a sense of movement. I have a sense of, I think I'm better... I was better equipped to be an action director, an action choreographer, because I had a degree in art as well. Because you know, there's, you know, like composition, you know depth and photography, all those things I was trained in. So, you know, when I made that transition from choreography to action director, that was really smooth, because I knew how I wanted to capture my things, and I knew the way to capture the movement that I wanted to capture. So, but in terms of in front of the camera, there was a little bit of development, you know. I did take acting courses when I did come to Hong Kong, but not prior to that.
You've got a great look about you. So you're cool on screen, and obviously you can fight as well. So, but I mean, was that just something over time, the more practice that you did it, the more your confidence grew in front of camera?
I try not to be shy, but I mean, you know, when you're not equipped, I mean, then that's when the shyness comes in, because your confidence is low, because you're not equipped with the proper skill set or the experience. And I remember when I made a movie, I think it was Enter the Phoenix, there's a scene I did with Nicholas Jie Tingfeng, who ended up being my good friend after that movie. It was way after that movie that I met him again, then we became really good friends. But during that movie, I didn't know him, but I remember that scene. It was very difficult for me, because I had a few lines, and it was my second movie. or first movie that I had to speak. I kept messing up my lines. You know, I was really nervous. And I remember the director laughing at me, and then his girlfriend. I mean, they did it in jest. You know, I know those guys now. We were fine. But you know, back in the old days, you know, I felt like I was a nobody. You know, a lot of self-confidence issues, and that really hurt me. Right, it was really hard. And the more nervous I felt, the harder it was for me to deliver my lines. But you know, thank God, Nick is a good person. You know, he's super famous. You know, and especially at that time, he didn't get mad at me. Nothing. You know, didn't get impatient. You know, didn't do any of that. He actually fed me my lines as I was filming with him, and it made the whole experience better. You know. And later on, I would tell him this experience once we became, you know, real good buddies, and I think he forgot. but anyway, it was very influential for me. And then I talked. I remember making House of Fury, you know, with the same director, I was working with Michael Wong, at the time, and I remember asking Michael, I was like, "Yo, how do you not get nervous and not mess up and not NG?" You know, and he's like, "Well, Phil, the most important thing is, you got to not care about what anyone else thinks about you," you know? And I was like, okay.
It's good advice. So
it's great advice. He's like, don't worry about it. If you don't care about what anyone thinks, you will not NG because you don't care. Because the more you care, the more you'll mess up. And, you know, I mean, it was hard to develop that kind of confidence and mentality, but he is absolutely right. Now I actually don't care. I really don't care. I mean, when I'm in the scene, the most important thing is I finish that scene and I do right by my acting partner. And I do right by everyone on set. I do my job, and that's it. I don't care about what anyone thinks and what they think and what they do, because you can't. You know, you're performing. You have to be in that space. It's more of a mentality that you have to develop more than any, I think, specific skill set in terms of acting. Because I think acting is this honesty. You know, you understand you have to understand the emotion or the message that the director or the story wants you to convey, and you do it in the way that you feel is most appropriate. You know, as honestly as possible. And I think to do that, you have to be comfortable and you have to be confident. And that just takes time to develop, and it takes experience.
My lord, for the sake of the Buddha, please spare Shaolin.
Working with some of your heroes as well, Phil, because we should just mention, obviously, Jackie Chan, New Police Story, Sammo, you've worked with quite a few times now. They were just as great in real life to work with?
No, they're wonderful. I mean, I'm a fanboy, right? I mean, I'm there because of them. I mean, I watched Drunken Master 1 so much, the VHS tape exploded. So, I mean, I worked with Jackie very early in my career. So imagine my fanboyism, you know. I mean, it's like, I mean, every time I see them now, I still have to kind of hold in my urine because I don't want to pee my pants. So, I'm so excited when I see them.
Yeah.
But I mean, imagine back then, right? So Jackie was extremely kind to me. I remember he saw me do a kick in House of Fury, and he's like, "Wow, that kick was super great." You know, he used a different adjective, but I mean, I was like, "Wow," Jackie complimented me. Super.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember, like, it was just surreal. I mean, I didn't really get to converse with him a lot, you know, during that time, because, you know, I was very new and very shy and timid, you know, I don't want to get in the way of anybody. But yeah, it was great, you know. And then it was surreal, and it was great. And I cherished those moments. And with Sammo, you know, like you said, I was part of the Galak stunt team, and then Sammo is his mentor, so I'm kind of like in that lineage. So I mean, you know, I you know, really regularly follow his work and trying to, you know, understand, you know, the intricacies of his choreography, because, you know, it's something that influenced me a lot, because, you know, it's designed, but designed in a way where it's very plausible. It doesn't look like these moves are impossible and it can be pulled off by human beings that are tough, but at the same time, it's designed and it's filmed in a way that's very powerful and aesthetically pleasing. So, you know, that's not always the case, especially with movies now. So, I mean, he's someone that I really admire. And then being on the set with him is surreal. And you don't not only get to see that he's, you know, he's such a good someone that's so good and behind the camera, but in front of the camera, he knows exactly what he's doing. And he knows exactly what everyone else is doing. He probably knows their job better than them. So, I mean, he's one of the few people that I see walking into a set that garners true respect from everybody. You know, sometimes, you know, people see that guy, some star power, and they kind of, you know, pretend to be, you know, respectful, but, you know, they kind of, you know, chuckle behind the guy's back. But, you know, no one does that to Sammo. Sammo is someone that
he's the boss. Yeah.
Everyone respects him because they know he knows his stuff. And then another thing that I'm very impressed with Sammo is, you know, I work with a lot of big name actors and big name stars that, you know, as a choreographer, and a lot of times they take over and they, you know, they have a lot of opinions and you know, they don't trust your judgment in a way. And then I'd understand, because, you know, when I entered the industry, they're already like superstars and they're my idols. But with Sammo, I noticed it's something very different. He's very professional in a way that when someone else is the choreographer of a movie, he just does what he's told, and he'll make a few jokes or maybe he'll make a few adjustments to help himself. But he is very cooperative, and he does not need to be. He can say whatever and everyone will be like, oh yeah, you know, that's the way to do it. But he's very accommodating. So yeah, man, definitely one of my heroes.
New Police Story and Invincible Target as well are both Benny Chan films. We lost Benny Chan, obviously, last year. Just working with Benny, I mean, he made some wonderful Hong Kong action films in his career. Yeah, your thoughts on working with Benny?
I love Benny. I love him. I say that because when I was working on an Invisible Target, my resume wasn't as thick. And, it's like in the States, you know, poop rolls downhill, right? You know, and people don't care. You know, it's very delineated, you know, in terms of like your status in the industry. But, when actors are eating, like, you know, you see the lead actors and all the stuff eating with the director, and everyone else kind of sits on the side with their rice box and everything. And it's very segregated. And it was the first time on a film that I felt comfortable in my own skin. And because Benny was great to me, and he's like, yo, don't go sit by yourself, come and eat with us, you know. And then and also the actors in the movie were great. You know, Nick was my, you know, good friend. Andy was on it. Like, a lot of my good friends were on it. It was fun working with Wu Jing, you know. It was just great. And but Benny was great. He didn't make me feel like an outsider. I remember him saying something to me, and because I was very appreciative of the way he treated me, he's like, Bill, it doesn't matter, I only like people that work hard. I mean, that, you know, that was his philosophy, it's refreshing to someone that was in my position at the time. You know, it's always, you know, because, you know, this industry is not kind to people. But, you know, when you meet kind people, it's you remember that for the rest of your life. And I remember he's a very serious director on a set. You know, he needs to get stuff done. But, you know, he's, you know, good humored. But I remember at that time, Pride MMA, Pride competition back in Japan, I had a lot of those DVDs. And that was when MMA was just starting to come to the forefront, especially in Hong Kong and everything. And I used to bring those DVDs to the set. I remember he would be like, the assistant director, he's like, yo, director, it's time for the next shot. He's like, no, let me finish watching this fight first. And he would never do that. And then he actually was really interested in it. And he's like, yo, you know, we should think about making a movie like that. And then, but, you know, not 2 weeks later, Flashpoint came out. So,
It took about a decade, and then you get your leading man debut opposite Andy, Once Upon a Time in Shanghai. Yen Wu Ping's working the fight choreo, Sammo's in there as well. How did that come about, your role in that film?
I've been around in Hong Kong, like you said, for about 8 years at that time. Yep. And I've been steadily working. You know, I didn't get lead roles or anything, but I had a lot of roles, and I was very fortunate. I constantly got work, and people were able to see what I could do. And then at that time, I was approached by a very prolific Hong Kong producer, Wang Jing. I'm sure you've heard of him.
Yeah, yeah. I counted actually how many films you've done with him. Is it seven films you've done with him? You've done a lot. Probably he's very prolific, though, isn't he?
Yeah, probably more. But he approached me. He signed me to his management and production company. So you know, Hong Kong is still have a sort of a studio system here. And so basically, his company managed my career, as well as, you know, producing movies that I was to be in. And that wasn't the first movie that I worked. That was like the third. Once Upon a Time in Shanghai, I think, was the third movie that I did with them. Third or fourth, I don't remember. But it was before then. I had a couple bigger roles in previous in movies. Then this was to be my starring vehicle.
And Wang Jing was like, "This is your film, Phil." Like, he designed. He had you in mind for a lead role. Is that how that came about?
Well, I worked on a couple of productions that he did that he didn't write specifically for me. They were just roles that I could fill, that action roles that I could do. And you know, and they were pretty significant. And, you know, I learned a lot on those. And then also he gave me a lot of chances to do choreography and also direction work. And then, you know, then he was waiting to create, you know, a starring vehicle for me, I guess. And then that was the impetus for him to create this movie. And, you know, and he wrote the initial script, and he hired on Wang Jingpo, the director, who I admire very much, and I still admire very much, and learned a lot from him. And then he got Yu Mouping involved, and I think it was, you know, he in part because Yu Mouping knew who I was, and he worked with me before, and I think he was very kind of him to come on and help out for this movie.
Different kind of pressure though when you're the top billing actor on a film, I would imagine. I mean, was it intimidating, or did you were just, because you were match fit by that point, you were just like, no, this is great, I've got this kind of thing?
Yeah, I got it. I felt like I got it. I mean, because I've been in the business for so long, I was dying to kind of show people what I could do. And then I had already done quite a few movies before then where, you know, pretty much a lead role as well, but there was an ensemble cast kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, but like I said, you know, I was ready. You know, I think I was ready 10 years ago before that. But you know, just we had to wait till the opportunity arose. And then, you know, and then, like, you know, and thank God he also casted my best friend as my best friend.
Working with Andy, yeah. Because we should say it's a remake, isn't it, of the boxer from Shantung. So that classic Shaw Brothers film.
Yeah. And the original boxer from Shantung was in the movie.
You know that. Chen Quan Tai.
He was one of the antagonists that I fought at the end. It was pretty surreal.
Yeah, that's great. That must have been weird for him, I'd imagine, because that's his most famous role. Yeah.
Well, I was telling him I'm the off-brand version.
What are you gonna do now? Try again? Hey, hasn't your master taught you how? Hasn't he?
That leads in neatly into Birth of the Dragon. So was Bruce Lee one of your heroes growing up?
Well, absolutely. I think he was a hero to anyone who does martial arts, right? I mean, especially Chinese kid, you know, growing up in America, right? Bruce Lee was the epitome of the person who defends himself against any kind of oppression. So, you know, he was like, you know, of course he was a hero. Not just that. I mean, you know, he was one, you know, when I was really deep into investigating the combat side of martial arts, you know, his stuff came up first. You know, I read all his books. I you know, watch all his videos, listen to all his interviews. I mean, you know, when I got the role, it was like I imitated him or I you know, pretended to be him in you know, in so many ways, in terms of like when I'm, you know, like I make jokes or talk, you know, and do all that stuff, I mimic him. So it felt almost natural when I got the role. But how that came to be was this. They were casting for Bruce Lee, and everyone knew about it, but you know, and I didn't think I was gonna be on the list of people that they're going to ask. You know, I mean, you know, you always are self-conscious about yourself, and especially with U.S. movies, you know, we all sometimes even we cast for U.S. movies. A lot of times they just do it for publicity. You know, they just do like a bunch of casting calls to let people know that there's a movie happening, get buzz going on, but they don't really plan on using anybody from other regions. But whatever the case, they had a casting call, and one of the people that got the casting call was my buddy Andy On, you know, Andy from Once Upon a Time in Shanghai. And he's like, yo, I don't look like Bruce Lee, but I know I have a friend that kind of looks like Bruce Lee, and he does Wing Chun, and he does Kung Fu for real, you know. And then the producer over there, like, yo, you know, why not send him the script and let him read? You know, it won't hurt. So, you know, they sent me the script, and Andy and his fiance, now wife, And then another friend of ours spent like 6 hours filming, you know, all the scenes that were sent. And then once I got, you know, sent it to scenes, I didn't think any of it, you know, because usually when you cast for U.S. stuff, nothing happens. So we just like, whatever, especially for Bruce Lee, right? You know, whatever.
Yeah.
So we sent it in. But literally like 2-3 days after, I got a call back, and they're like, yo, the director wants to talk to you on Skype. You know, we didn't have Zoom back then, right? So done on Skype, and you know, it seemed like it was going real well, and then seemed like he really liked me, and I was like, nah, this, you know, whatever, you know, it's pretty cool that I got to meet a U.S. director. And then they're like, yo, we want you for it. I'm like, no way, are you serious? And then but in the middle they got someone else, and then that someone else I think ended up not doing it for some reason. I don't remember why. And then he wasn't the director's first choice. I think he was the first choice of the investors, because I think that the person they originally wanted had a bigger market than me. And then, but the director thought I was, you know, he thought it was a better choice. So, and then he eventually got me back on board and ended up doing the movie.
I mean, talk about dream roles. I mean, that's quite a big role, that, isn't it? I mean, how did
it's a big role, but it's also big shoes to fill, you know?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, Bruce Lee has been played on screen a few times as well. I thought you were excellent as Bruce Lee in that film.
Thank you.
Because you're playing him at a part of in his life where he's still developing, isn't he? It's sort of an origin story in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the difference from this movie is we kind of like really investigated in the different facets of him that maybe some weren't so positive, you know. And but I think you know, the thing is, it also proved that he's a human being, you know. He's not a god as a lot of other productions portray him to be. And you know, and I think that was, I mean, I remember when the director told me, he's like, yo, don't rub your nose, don't do any of those mannerisms that are known that Bruce Lee does, don't do any of that, you know, be human, like be the guy in that situation, you know, like you're like, you're an immigrant, you're trying to struggle and fight in a system where everyone's against you, but you know, you have the talent to kind of push through, you know, I mean, what would you do? How far would you go? What would you say? What would your feelings be in that moment? And, and it was very relevant to me because I kind of went through that when I was, you know, kind of pushing through in my career in Asia. So I kind of related to that.
And was there a nervousness playing Bruce Lee just because it's almost like, you know, sacred text in a way, isn't it? People love Bruce Lee, and then any representation of his life on screen, you're going to face, you know, a backlash or some scrutiny. Did you feel that on set?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I did not feel that on set, but I felt that, you know, as, you know, you're reading YouTube comments, you'd feel it, but... But I think people who really watched the film and people who really pay attention to it, I think they knew that we respected the subject matter and we wanted to do it justice. I mean, however the story happened is however the story was written. But in terms of how we approach the character, how we approach the story, we did it with the utmost respect, and we wanted to make sure that we, you know, we respected the subject. And I think that was the main thing, and that's what made me comfortable, because I wasn't asked to play a god. I was asked to play human being in that situation, and that's what I did. And I was very comfortable in doing it, and everyone was very supportive. And in the US, when you're working, there's a lot of support. There's a dialogue coach, there's acting coaches, there's like all these things, and there's catering, there's a trailer. You know, it's crazy. You have all these support, you know, and then all I had to worry about was doing my job. So I, you know, it was a great experience. I loved it. And I heard of some of Bruce's students, you know, actually saw this movie. I won't say who, but, you know, they actually said that, from what I heard, you know, their you know, secondhand account, they thought that, you know, it was a good representation of how Bruce was at that time in his life.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, there you go. That's great to hear. It's about this, you know, bout between Bruce Lee and Wong Jack Man. But Wong Jack Man was still alive, and I've seen a photo of you at the premiere, I think. So you met Wong Jack Man, but he was a consultant on the film as well then, was he?
I met him. Yeah, I met him at the premiere, and also during the film. We did a week shoot in San Francisco, and I think we met. We also met him then too. He was very, very kind gentleman. It was nice listening to his stories. It was, it's always a pleasure listening to old kung fu guys talk about their past. Yeah. You know, that's a hobby of mine too. So it was good to get that opportunity.
Training to become Bruce Lee, to get the Bruce Lee body. I mean, you're pretty cut, and you're sort of, you know, you work out anyway, but, you know, the Bruce Lee aesthetic, the look, was that easy to achieve? Did you have to go on the Bruce Lee diet?
I'm used to kind of having to get fit for a movie, because I did that for Once Upon a Time in Shanghai. I did that for a lot of movies and a lot of TV shows that I do in Hong Kong as well. I'm expected to take off my shirt at least in one scene. I mean, that's funny, because I was never like that before I started doing movies. I mean, I trained a lot and I competed, but, you know, I never trained for aesthetics. And, you know, now I do. And there's a very specific way to do it, and there's a very specific diet that you have to go through. But, you know, I have all that stuff kind of systemized. So I just had to follow the system, follow the program. It was fine. And I had a lot more time in the States to to rest and train. So in fact, I think if I look back now, I think I was a little bit too bulky because I had too much time to rest and too much time to train.
Right.
I think if I would slim down a little bit more, like I had a look when I was doing my TV show, Fist Within Four Walls, I think that physique would have been perfect for Bruce Lee. I think it was a little bit bulky for Birth of the Dragon, looking back. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, overall, I think it was fine.
You really are a stupid man. If you think you're any match for me.
If I wasn't so sure, do you think I'd be here?
You'd better say your prayers. You're gonna die.
Generally working in Hollywood, is that something that you would like to pursue, Phil, do you think?
I think I'll work anywhere, really. You know, making movies now, it's more international because of, especially with the advent of streaming services, like, you know, like with maybe like, you know, like you see Korea has a lot of shows on Netflix, and you see maybe like Vietnam has some shows on there from countries that you may not normally be able to get media from. You're able to get it from there. So, I mean, like, I could be producing movies here and then selling it to international market, and they'll still be able to see my movies. But if specifically a Hollywood movie, you know, casted me to be in it, I would love to work there. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I'd love to work anywhere. But right now, especially with in the current times, you know, a lot of the projects that I had been attached to are postponed or canceled at the moment. And so I still have a bunch of work coming out that I've done previously. But in the meantime, right now, I'm really focusing on developing new projects and for, you know, some streaming services around the world. And hopefully I can be able to successfully sell through project this year and go into production before the end of the year. That's my goal.
And they've been delayed or cancelled because of what? Just because of COVID? Is that COVID?
Yeah, it's a COVID. Yeah, COVID. Because I think it's the same for a lot of people. So it's been a difficult time. But I mean, you know, I thank God that I've been working a lot before then, so I'm able to use this time to kind of not worry too much and kind of how focus with writing with my writing partner on developing a few new projects. So that's so it's a blessing in disguise.
Just going forward then, I guess, you know, producing, getting more involved, getting your own projects off the ground, that is something you're super keen on doing then, you think, moving forward and working more behind the scenes as well?
Yeah, I think that's the next stage of my career. Yeah. I mean, I think being more of a content creator, being more involved with the creative and production side of it, and then, but you know, still producing stuff for myself and for my friends. But you know, but working more in that aspect and learning more about that stuff, because I think right now to be in control of your career, you need to be a content creator. And if you look at the old Jackie Chan movies, old Sammo Hung movies, and Golden Harvest, you know, they all did their own production, they all did their own writing, they all did their own direction.
They did.
You know? So
yeah.
And those were some of the best movies. So I think I want to kind of maybe hopefully be able to follow that route and create my own stuff.
And there's still an appetite for action. You know, that's not a genre that's going to go out of fashion, is it? Let's be honest.
Well, I mean, look at all the movies you see now. You see all those kung fu action movies. I mean, those scenes that before you can only find in kung fu movies, you find them in Avenger movies, you find them in low budget B movies, you find them in Bollywood movies now. I mean, it's ubiquitous, you know, it's everywhere.
And it does seem to me that there is a return to this sort of style of action that you create, you know, a more grounded, realistic, martial arts fused style of fight choreography, which does seem to be very popular now, even in Hollywood. You know, the John Wick's movies have that style of fight scene in them as well. So, you know, it's a great time, isn't it, really, for action cinema?
Yeah, it's a great time. And you'd have to thank guys like, you know, 8711, you know, pumping out like John Wick, those kind of movies. And, you know, it's bringing, you know, it's kind of really reinvigorating the genre. And also, like, it's proving to Hollywood that, you know, the fans like to see this stuff, you know. And I heard a story that they had to shop it to 11 studios and none of them bought it, you know. And then, but Lionsgate took care of it, you know.
John Wick, they had to fight for that.
And, but not, you know, and then now they you know, they help the rest of us, you know, be able to sell our work a little bit easier. So, and, you know, thank you to them.
But that's the weird thing, isn't it? Because Hong Kong has used its stunt community and the action stars to direct films for, you know, that's been happening for decades. But it took a while for Hollywood to catch up there, didn't it? To actually let the stunt guys take over and say, oh yeah, you know, you can actually make your own film here. Just took a long time, I think, for them to catch up to Hong Kong.
Yeah, well, but also you needed someone who's talented and also, like, not just have the will. I mean, you really need to have the skill set too, and these guys did. And then they made something that was enjoyable. I mean, in terms of storytelling, I mean, you know, there's going to be, you know, where it was, you know, certain aspects of it that's very, you know, you can tell that's written by an action director. But I mean, but it serves the purpose of, you know, driving the action and driving the movie forward, and it's very interesting. The most important thing is, I think, with the John Wick series, the thing that they did right is the world building. You know, the world building is it's amazing, and it's and then you fit that character within that world, and you watch him do things, and it's a very winning formula. And then you know, it's just surprising that Hollywood didn't pick up on it earlier.
Yeah. Well, typically, it's a little bit behind, isn't it? Sometimes, but. Philip, this has been great to chat with you, and best of luck with the release of the movie in the States, Undercover Punch and Gun. I had a lot of fun
with
it.
Thank you so much.
It's a good movie.
Thank you so much.
And all the best for, you know, your future projects.
Thanks a lot, Ben. Appreciate it.
Okay, you have a good day.
Okay, take care.
Philip Ng there. Wonderful stuff. So cool to chat to Philip, one of the coolest, nicest, and one of the biggest Hong Kong martial arts action stars currently working. And he has been in some really great martial arts films. Just check out his filmography on IMDb. I'll be sure to put a link to it in the description. And Birth of the Dragon, of course, is an interesting film. Look, whatever you might think of Birth of the Dragon, or at least some of the decisions made in its storytelling, you cannot deny that Philip is just wonderful as Bruce Lee in that film. And also Chia Yu, we should say, is also great in that movie. He plays Wong Jackman, Bruce Lee's martial arts nemesis in that movie. Anyway, look, Philip's latest martial arts film is called Undercover Punch and Gun. You can stream it right now on Hiya TV in North America. It is also available on Blu-ray, DVD and digital, courtesy of Wowgo USA. Head to the website hiyatv.com and you can enjoy a free trial of the martial arts movie streaming platform. You can follow Philip Ng on social media. He is on Instagram. His name there is at StraightBlast5. So that's the digit 5. And Philip is also on Facebook under his full name, which is at Ng Wan Lung. You can also read our review of Undercover Punch and Gun now on our website, kungfumovieguide.com. And be sure to check out the description of this podcast for any other links. We'll put a link up to the trailer of the movie. You can also read a bio that I've put together on Philip Ng and any other social media links and any other goodies that take my fancy, so do go and check all of that out. And I think that's it for today. So thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of the show, and remember to like it, share it, leave a comment, write a review, tell your friends, subscribe to the podcast, join the mailing list, follow us on social media. So many options available to you guys, the loyal Food followers. Thank you so much for your support. I will be back again with another brand new episode in our sixth season of podcasts in 2 weeks' time. Until then, my friends, do take care, stay safe, stay well, and I will speak to you all again very soon on the Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.